Good evening, everyone. We're glad to see everyone here tonight. We're on lesson number 8, chapter 14 of the book of Acts. So we'll get part of the way through the lesson tonight, if not most of the way through it. This puts us in the second half of the book of Acts, I believe. Acts has 28 chapters. As our custom has been, let us read the chapter over, at least part of the chapter, before we begin our discussion. Does anybody want to volunteer to read? Let's just read the whole chapter. It's not very many verses.
Okay. And it came to pass in Iconium that they went both together into the synagogue of the Jews. And so the faith that a great multitude, both of the Jews and also of the Greeks, believed. But the unbelieving Jews that were disobedient, stirred up the Gentiles and made their minds evil against the brethren. Long time before, while they speaking boldly in the Lord, which gave testimony unto the word of his grace, and granted signs and wonders to be done by their means. But the multitude of the city was divided, and part held with the Jews, and part with the apostles. And when there was a stop made both of the Gentiles and also of the Jews, with their rulers, to use them despitefully and to stone them. They were aware of it and fled into Lystra and Derbe cities of Laconia and into the region that lie round about. There they preached the gospel, and there said certain men at Lystra, impotent in his feet, being a cripple from his mother's womb, who never had walked. The same heard Paul speak, who steadfast in holding him, and perceiving that he had faith to be healed, said with a loud voice, "Stand upright on thy feet," and he leaped and walked. And when the people saw that Paul had done, they lifted up their voices, saying, in the speech of Laconian, "The gods are come down to us in the likeness of men." And they called Barnabas Jupiter and called Mercurius, because he was the chief speaker. Then the priest of Jupiter, whose temple was before the city, brought oxen and garlands unto the gate, and would have done sacrifice for the people. Which when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of what they rent their clothes and ran in among the people, crying out and saying, "Sirs, why do ye these things? We are also men of like passion with you and preaching to you, bring the good tidings, that ye should turn from these vanities unto the living God, which made heaven and earth and the sea and all the things that are therein. Who in time pass suffered all nations to walk in their own ways. Nevertheless, we left not himself without witness, in that he did good and gave us rain from heaven, and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. And with these things, scarce restrained they people, that they had not done sacrifice unto them. And there came hither certain Jews from Antioch and Iconium, who persuaded the people, and having stoned Paul, threw him out of the city, supposing he had been dead. Howbeit, as the disciples stood round about him, he rose up and came into the city, and the next day he departed with Barnabas to Derbe. And when they had preached the gospel to the city and had taught many disciples, they returned again to Lystra and Iconium and Antioch, confirming the souls of the disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith, and that we must, through much tribulation, enter into the kingdom of God. And when they had ordained, appointed for them elders in every church, and had prayed and confessed, and they commended them to the Lord for whom they believed. And after they had passed throughout Persia, they came to Pamphylia, and when they had preached the word in Perga, they went down to
Italia,
and then sailed to Antioch, from which they had been recommended, committed to the grace of God for the work which they had fulfilled. And when they were come and had entered the church together, they rehearsed all that God had done with them, and how he had opened the door of faith unto the Gentiles. And there they abode a long time with the disciples.
All right, thanks for reading that. On page number 25 of the lesson book, question number 1, into what place did Paul and company enter at Iconium?
The synagogue.
Into the synagogue, synagogue of the Jews, verse 1. As you'll see, as we've already seen, and we'll note even more from henceforth, always it seems to be the first place that Paul goes to try to teach the gospel is to the synagogue of the Jews, which seems kind of weird because that's the enemy. Or I know it's of Paul's own people, but at the same time, they're the ones that seem to stir up all the trouble all the time against Christ, the teachings of Christ. The second part of the question is, what caused a great multitude of the Jews and Greeks to believe?
Paul's preaching.
Yep, the preaching or teaching of the gospel. The gospel will convert people once they will listen and have a willing heart, or a heart that's ready to receive it, just as it is, as we know in the parable of the sower, you know, where he starts out, a sower went forth to sow. And the types of grounds that's talked about in that parable, you have the stony ground, the hard ground, the weedy ground, and then you have the good ground. And the good ground that the seed falls upon, it will sprout and go. We have, you know, in farming terms, whenever, this year when I went and looked at it the other day, the deer plots, food plots, we got two on one place. And just whatever grows on the other place. I didn't strow some seed. My brother-in-law strowed some seed over the place probably about 3 weeks ago-ish. And some of that was good ground. Because we go out there and the seed is taking root. It's up. You know, we've got crimson clover sticking out of the ground. Winter, rye grass and a few things like that. It's sticking up right now. It won't be long. Them deer will be wrapping them tongues and teeth around that grass. Around that and be grazing it. And I asked him if they sowed any turnip greens, and nobody admitted to it, but I have a feeling there'll be some pop up in there somewhere, even though it's a little bit late to sow them. But not for deer, they'll still eat them. Anyway, the seed was on a prepared, good ground, and where it fell on that, it's coming up. Now, there's other parts of the ground of outliers, so they just did strips, where the seed will fall and it'll either half come up or it won't come up at all because it hath no depth of root. The reason it won't have a depth of root is because the soil will be hard or be compacted from where we drove and walk and so forth. So it will try to put out a root, and then what will happen is that the cold will get it. It'll wither and go away. Well, the people, it seems, were the ones of the good soil. They were ready to receive the seed of the word that was being preached to them. Question number 2 says, what word describes Paul's preaching?
Boldly.
Boldly. What does it mean to speak boldly?
Bravely or in a confident way.
Truthfully. Without fear.
Without fear of offending someone.
Yep. It's amazing how much believable what somebody says when they come before you boldly and confidently. If they don't come before you confidently, well, I don't know about this, and they're telling you about something, well, you don't know about it either, do you? You know, it's kind of wishy-washy. And so Paul says they come boldly before him. They were certain in what they were speaking. Think about this just for a moment, and this idea of boldly speaking. You have a group of people that perhaps a few days before this didn't even know who Paul was. Didn't know who Barnabas was. Like, who are these people that's coming in? And now they've come to listen, and they hear this being spoken, the words being spoken. I'm sure they examine them before they decide to accept them. Just as it is with us, the word, or at least I believe with our conversion, we heard the word, we might not have responded right away, but it grew on us, grew within us. And when it had time to sprout and to grow, we reacted to it. We responded to the message that was preached. We know that Paul had the gift of the Holy Spirit. We know that Paul, if he came before us and proved he was Paul, we'd believe every word he said without question. I don't think that was the case with all of these people. Might have been with some, but I don't believe it was with all. They had to think and they had to read and learn, and perhaps they might have been Jews. They would have had some knowledge of the Old Testament and perhaps maybe have checked out some of what he said, compared it to the Old Testament scrolls. Because no doubt he would have shared messages from Isaiah. No doubt he would have shared messages from the prophets. Why? Because they all speak of Jesus. Yes, sir.
If we go back and look at what they did in the synagogues and things, we might have a better understanding. It was the custom of the Jews that every day, first thing in the morning, they would go to the synagogue, what they would say, to worship. And what they would do is if they had a visitor, they would let the visitor get up and speak. And so that is one reason that Paul and the other apostles went to the synagogues when they first went to the city, is that. And then it's interesting that recently that there was a city that spoken of in the Bible that there is no more. Right? In other words, it's disintegrated. And for the last few years, they've been doing some excavating, and they have. If you look at the synagogue, they found the synagogue, it's got rooms. And they say that they're what would be like our Sunday school. They also had a room of worship. And they found a table in that room that had, like where we have on the table up there, about the remembrance of the Lord. Do this in remembrance of me. They had a inscribed in front of the table, a menorah, and they said that that was indicating that was the room where they would worship
them forever. Mm-hmm. This but also provided a platform for distribution of the information. We don't have, in our country, we don't, I think it's because our government's not centered around religion. The town square usually doesn't have a church in it. But pretty much everywhere else you go in the world, that's the center building of the square, so to speak, or the town round, or whatever it might be. That's true of just about every place I've been. And usually those countries are centered around some religion. And that may be a mosque in some countries, or usually it's a Catholic church in most of the European countries, and some of your North Asian countries, as well as North African. A lot of times it's a Catholic church or synagogue. So anyway, it's looked at as the town center. When I was down in Mexico, when I went visited the city, I visited several cities. Every one of them, this was the feature. The town center was where the big church was. And every one of those places they took me, where it was León, where it was Jalisco. Well, Jalisco is the state. Forgot the name of it. Place where they had a lot of milk. That's the dairy capital. Was in Jalisco, and same thing. Every time they'd take me to the town center, this is a square, and there'd be people all around it. But anyway, before I get too far off, I'm sure that this was in some of these cities. This was probably what was going on. The big churches were the town centers. And so that would have been a good place to have a launching platform for the message, because people would be coming by and people would be around to hear. Next question, question number three is, how did God give testimony to the word of his grace? By the signs and wonders. So what do you think a sign or a wonder is?
Like
miracles, yeah.
Just like we're going to study here a couple of questions. Man in the field.
Yep. There was confirming the word. Question number four. What was the multitude planning to do with Paul and his company?
Stone
them. Who were the ones that was going to stone him?
The Jews.
The Jews, or at least they were part of them. You go verse number four, or verse four rather. But the people of the city were divided, and some sided with the Jews and some sided with the apostles. And when an attempt was made by both the Gentiles and the Jews, it's like everybody's involved, with their rulers, to mistreat and to stone them. Sounds kind of bad, doesn't it? Like a bad, bad situation. They were ready to stone them, ready to get rid of them because of what they were teaching. Have we seen a similar situation before in the reading? I think this is the third or fourth one we've read about, where the Jews got the people together to cause an uproar, an uprising against the truth that was being spoken. And remembering the previous chapter, one of the reasons they were wholly against what was being taught is because they were stealing their people. They didn't like the big crowds that was being generated. They didn't like the converts that was happening. So that's why they were wholly against it. So they were ready to stone them. Where did they flee and preach the gospel? Lystra and Derbe. Verse 6, they became aware of it. And talking about Paul and company, when they became aware that they were fixing to mistreat or beat them and stone them, they said, it's time to get out of here. Question number five is, what deed did Paul perform at Lystra that caused such a stir?
He healed a crippled man.
He healed a crippled man. You would think that people would be excited about that, wouldn't you? You think people be all right with this? I've wondered if there was some money tied to this. That perhaps there were some handlers with this man. Notice that in the scripture, at least the King James, it talked about the reason, which is unusual. Usually you don't see the reason worded this way of why they decided to heal this man. Did anybody pick up on that? Because he was a believer. That's highly unusual. Sometimes we have people being healed and they're not believers, but they use them, or they become believers after they're healed, but they use them to confirm the word, to show that what they're saying is true. And in this case, they saw that he believed, and so they decided that they would heal him. And it says in verse 10 that he leaped and walked. I like the way it was described there. He didn't just get up and walk. He leaped and walked. Why is that significant?
It shows that he was really excited about being healed. But the same thing about it was he grew his credibility that he was able to leap up.
Yeah, strength.
Yeah,
strength.
Yeah.
Strength.
Yeah.
Even if we sat here and tried to get up.
Yeah, those, they probably some people that are like, I can't do that. But I think it's significant that he leaped and walked, because that really shows the power that of the miracle that happened. Now, how long had he been lame?
Since he was born.
Yeah, he never walked. Never walked, and here he is, not only walking, he's jumping, he's leaping, leaping and walking. It's kind of neat to think about that, so showing the goodness and the power of God at the same time.
That is interesting that you put it that way, because, I mean, as a child, as a baby, when you learn to walk, your muscles it takes you a while to get that balance and learn how to walk.
Yeah, because you're developing the muscles.
Right. He didn't have to develop his muscles. He didn't have to.
Yeah.
He just walked.
Yep. A little sidebar here. To me, this is one of the stories that shows that God created the earth in its completed form.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah.
This is an example of that. Yeah. It's an example of that happening, because somebody who'd never walked and probably had withered legs. The muscles were probably there, but they had no size to them.
He had to have withered legs.
Had to, because it hadn't been used. Think about it. Have you ever had a situation where you didn't use your arm or your leg for it doesn't have to be that long of a period of time, just a week or two. And they call it atrophying, because your muscles shrink. I experienced that one time. I had my knee problem before I got operated on and misdiagnosed and all this other stuff. And before we got there, I had some bad atrophy, and I didn't realize it till the therapist was like, you don't have any strength. I'm like, gee, thanks. So they had to work on it. Anyway, just thought that was a side thought there, that this proves that God is able. And even back to the beginning, he had the power to create a complete earth, not one that had to grow up. Where'd we get to? Number 5. What did the people think Paul and Barnabas were at this time?
Gods in the likeness of men.
Think about it. Derbe and Lystra. Think about their location. They were around idol cities. They were probably an idol country. So idol worship would have been part of them. Worshiping the stars, the moon, obviously was part of it, because they mentioned Jupiter and Mercury or Mercurius. And I think there's more evidence in this chapter to show that they were looking to the gods or the stars. And in the English New American Standard Update, they began calling Barnabas Zeus and Paul Hermes. Once again, these are both gods of the extraterrestrial gods. I can see why they would think they were gods, that in the likeness of men. What did they try to do towards Paul and Barnabas? Verse 13. Tried to worship them, make sacrifices to them.
You know, this reminds me of like when the Spanish went to the Aztecs,
Hadn't seen anything like that, had they?
They thought that they were gods and they were going to worship them.
Well, think about it. They had those pyramids and so forth. Hadn't seen that in Europe from where they came. I could see where they got that, but it seems that by what Paul's reaction to what he says is, wait a minute, you missed what I was trying to teach you. sort of thing. You missed it. But I could see it easily, them latching on to that idea because of where they lived. They wasn't far from port cities and so forth, where idol worship was all over the place. Number six, name at least two reasons given by Paul as to why the people should not worship them.
They were just men like they were.
Yep. What's the second reason? Yep. Turn from these things, serve the living God. We're men just like you. Now, that'd be a hard sell to me. We just seen you do a miracle. And you're saying you're no different than me? That'd be a hard sell right there. But the second part would be a hard sell as well, because now he's asking them to ignore everything that you know and serve the living God. The living God is obviously who they, to me, that they were not aware of, far as having knowledge of him. They probably knew he existed or something existed, but they were serving these other idolatrous gods instead of the true and living God. This question seven is name at least four or three things that Paul said about God.
One was he was a living God.
Yeah, one is a living God. Yep. What did he say in verse 17, I believe it is? Yep, verse 16. Then what did he say about him in verse 17? That he was good. Yep. Yep. Now, why is it important that he used those three attributes of God? Think about it. We're talking about their Jupiter and Mercurius, or Mercury's, who they're worshiping. Why do you think he chose to use those words with that thought in mind?
But Jupiter was like war, Mercury was fast and travel, and but they all had Athena, was warrior or Artemis, and so they all had their specific areas, and this one had everything.
Yep. I believe you hit it right there. That's why I think he used this to convince them, because you've got somebody that's in part. I can show you somebody that's complete.
Right.
Because all, like you said, these all have, they had in mythology the specific purposes, and none was all in encompassing. And so the true and living God, he's making the argument that he's complete. He can do it all. He is able. And he has done all these things for us, believer, unbeliever. Question number eight is explained in your own words, verse 16. And verse 16 says, "And this generation is gone, and he permitted all nations to go their own way." And I read that out of the American Standard Update.
We know that there are three dispensations: patriarchal, Jewish, and what we call a Christian dispensation. Okay? Now, under the patriarchal, he spoke to the fathers. Under the Jewish or Mosaical, he spoke to the Jews to keep them solidified as one nation, or supposedly wanted them to be, so that they could trace their ancestors back to Abraham, who he made the promise, and through that lineage become Christ. There were other people, obviously, on the earth. Now, there obviously, if we remember Cornelius, and there were others like Cornelius who worshiped God. But they were basically left up to their own devices. Whether they Jews or force is not the right word. I'll use the word encourage. They were encouraged by the prophets to worship Jehovah God. We don't know of a leader that encouraged the people who were the Gentiles to worship Jehovah God. So God left them up to their own thinking to follow him and do what was right. And we read in Romans about the fact that they would see the seasons and see everything that God had created, and they were supposed to follow God because of just the things that he, blessings that he had given mankind. For the Jews were specifically given through them the blessing of the world.
No, I think you got the point there, or to me you got the point. I think I got the point you're trying to make was, in the beginning, in that dispensation where God spoke to heads of households, everybody was to understand who God was. In the next dispensation, it was kind of like it was selective. And then so he let the nation, which would have been anybody other than the Jews, do their own thing, live their own way. And for the most part, it was not pleasing to God, was not good before him. And so now in the final dispensation, we're bringing everybody back together, or at least that's the goal. You had something to say?
Well, I was going to say, like Caesar in Rome, he started killing the Christians, which that's bringing attention to Christianity, and he also built the roads that carried the apostles to teach Christianity. So from that, there was in the Ottoman, the Byzantine Empire in Turkey, Justinian, he believed in Christianity, and he was a ruler that believed in it. And then you had Constantine come along, and he had to go and fight the Ottoman Turks. And he had this dream that they had on white with blue crosses, and it was Christianity. And so they went and won the battle against the Turks or the Muslims. And so, all of this is, as they did go with Christianity, they were given good things, like winning battles and so forth. And they had good empires.
They were doing, he was allowing them to do their thing. Another thing that I think about too is God has used, just as he'll use this nation to accomplish his purpose. Even though they were allowed to do their own thing, they seemed to always accomplish his purpose. Because many times it was even judging the right, sometimes it was judging the righteous, or so-called righteous, I guess we would say, the ones that had fallen away, to bring them back to God. He used those nations to do that. But I find it interesting that he brings this up about God to try to turn them around, that he is one that let the nations do what they want to in times past or in a certain time. I think so.
Yeah.
Because when we go see him before the Greeks, that's, I think he kind of pulls that in.
Well,
whenever we see.
That's right. He uses the word suffer.
Yep.
So, he let them suffer.
Yep.
Suffer.
Yeah, that's a good point. The word suffer there. They suffered then to walk in their own ways. Question number 9 is, even when God was not dealing directly with some of the nations, he still gave evidence of his existence. What was it?
The blessings that he gave, if we go back to Romans, they were, he was telling them they should know God just for looking around and seeing what's in nature.
The example he gives in verse 17 is the example he gives there, where he's telling them that he gave them rains from heaven, fruitful seasons, and then satisfying your hearts with food and gladness. There's the evidence. There's the evidence that God was there. God is real, because he done these things for everybody. Then question number 10 is, what happened to Paul at Lystra?
He was stoned.
Who got after him? Is the Jews again, and the crowd. Notice in verse 19, when the Jews came from Antioch. Notice, remember, in Antioch's where we had the problem, where they were gathering the whole town together, and they had to leave. And then remember, we've been to Iconium. What's happened at Iconium? Similar, but probably not as big of a mob. Or I didn't take it as big a mob, but now here we are. It is a huge mob. Because we've gotten cities of people together now, we're going to get these folks. So I can see them come with their torches and forks, pitchforks. And notice that it says, and having won over the crowds. Huge number, got to be a huge number. And then what did they do? They stoned Paul. Then what did they do? Drug him out of the city, supposing he was dead. If it hadn't said the word supposing he was dead, I would have chalked this up to a miracle. And now, because it's worded that way, it makes me wonder if he just got knocked out. Either way, they thought he was dead. And either way, I don't think it's wrong to assume it either way. Either way, a miracle was performed. Because whenever, if you're familiar with stoning, stoning's not picking up gravel like you find in the parking lot over here. This is finding probably fist or larger size rocks that they can one-handedly throw, you know, big size, because their intent is to kill. It's not to injure and maim. The intent is to kill someone.
Well, so, also some records of them digging like a small pit.
Yeah. Yeah.
They couldn't even run. They were just.
Yeah, they had them where you're right there. And then some places in the outside the gates of the city, they had places for this. They had places ready to stone. Because if you remember, under the law of Moses, how many things was in the Old Testament, or under the old law, where stoning was the punishment? Several things. You know what was mentioned Sunday about, you know, how it was stayed because of the adulterous situation they thrust them through. I believe that under the old law, back to Leviticus, that someone who was caught in that act was to be stoned.
Yeah.
They were to be stoned.
Let me ask you about that. If I remember correctly, and I'd have to go back and do a little reading, they could not be stoned to death inside the city. And when it talks about dragging Paul outside, I get the impression that what they did is they said, okay, he's almost dead. We can't kill him inside the gates. So we've got to take him outside and finish him off.
That's very well possible, because under Jewish, the quote, Jewish law, or the Old Testament law, they had to do it outside the gates. Because I remember reading several passages where it would say outside the gates.
That's what comes to my mind. I'm just saying, they were kind of being hypocritical about it in a way. We've almost killed him, so we can be right. They strayed him outside. They strayed him outside the gate. It means your mom.
Not to mention, just outside the gates was never, I mean, that was, it was a horrible place.
Yeah, it's where the bad stuff happened.
That was where the lepers were. That's where the a lot of the prostitutes were. That's beggars. I mean, it was just...
not a place you want to be. let's look at... Go ahead.
It's kind of like a miracle because, you know, it talks about how when the disciples came out to look at him, basically, he gets up. And start walking.
That's what I was. I was fixing to point that out. Verse 20 is what you're referring to there.
You know, it's like the guy leaping up being crippled. You know? It's like.
Yeah.
You don't do that.
So either way, I'm thinking when I read verse 20 that even if you were you survive this, you'd be bruised up and would you be able to stand up? Be laying there breathing, would you be able to stand up? But he stood up. And it says, and entered the city. He was able to walk. So based on what you're saying there, it looks like a miracle was involved. It had just about had to be. It had to be.
Can you imagine the impression he would have made on the people that stoned him, and then a little later, if they saw him?
Like, who's that? Where'd he come from? He have a twin.
That's the guy we just got through stoning.
Yeah. So let's do one more question, then we'll stop, or finish this question, and we'll stop. It says, what was accomplished at Derby? Yep. The gospel was preached, and disciples were made. they just can't stop it. Like the more you do, the more they do for persecution, the more it seems to spread.
More it grows.
And believe it or not, it's the same way today. Every time somebody tries to stomp out Christianity, it just grows. It may pop up somewhere else and grow, but it always grows. And it will till Jesus comes. You know why? Because the prophet said so. Remember that. The prophet said so back in the book of Daniel. When he talks about, gives the image of the statue with the head and the shoulders and all of that. What does it say about the feet? Won't be destroyed. Why? Because the prophecy of the church, it will not be destroyed. It is the last remaining thing that will endure on this earth. And to me, that's encouraging to think about. And I can't help but think that when these people learn about stuff, you know, those passages and things about this or spiritual matters like this, that it is an encouragement to them when they're in the middle of the persecution, in the middle of the battle. Had something he's going to say?
Yeah, this goes along with what you're saying, but it deviates a little bit from what you're saying too. Today, everybody is worried about the world being destroyed through global warming or climate change or this, that, and the other. If you believe what God says, the world is not going to be destroyed. Man is not going to be destroyed by either global warming, global cooling, climate change, nuclear bombs. That's not the way it's going to be destroyed. God has said how he was going to destroy it. It's going to be consumed in fire.
That's right. He said he's going to burn it off. That's what we read about in 1 Peter, I believe it is. And that's the way it's going to be. Anything else as we conclude this evening?
No.